and it is financed by a number of foundations that are in support of this activity in Minneapolis and in St. Paul. As you can see by the slide presentation that you have, and you also have some of the information in front of you in the folder that we passed out, that only 3% of the Minnesota's African American American Indian ninth graders and 5% of Latino ninth graders are projected to complete a bachelor's degree before they are 25 years of age. And that was a study that was completed recently, and I'm sure that most of you have seen that study. The Power of You, again, reaches out to students in Minneapolis and St. Paul who were not planning on going to college. It has three components in it. One is the K-12 reach back component, where we are attempting to make sure that students are aware of the college opportunities, and hopefully by identifying the fact that they can go to college, that there's financial ability to go to college, that they will start planning earlier to make sure that they're going to be ready to go on to college for the classes that are coming behind the class that we have started. Secondly, it's a financial support program where we went out and raised the money through very generous foundations in Minneapolis and St. Paul to provide the dollars to provide economic support for the students in the program and also to pay tuition for these students. And the third piece of the goal is for retention and support services. We recognize that many of these students need extra support if we're going to retain them in college. And so therefore we have hired additional staff to try to provide support for these individual students to make sure that we retain them after they come to college, recognizing that just getting them to college is not just the answer. Okay. We have a clip from Mike Christensen from the Minneapolis side talking about the importance of this program and the opportunity for students that we would like to play for you at this time.
As Director of Economic Development in the City of Minneapolis, most employers come to us with an initial concern, and that concern is workforce. Building the future workforce is crucial to what we do in the City of Minneapolis. Building hope within that future workforce is also crucial. What Power U does is puts the power in the youth and removes barriers to higher education. As we go through our public high schools, we have 7 in Minneapolis, the most common concern of any student is, I would certainly go to college, could I afford it? The Power of You provides the opportunity for this college to wrap its arms around that youth earlier in life and say to them, listen, college is achievable, it is affordable, in fact it will be free if you stay at grade and work hard in your high school.
We also have a clip of some student testimonials talking about what the program has meant to them this year.
Everybody should desire it. I just didn't know where I was going to end up going and know how I was going to get all of it paid for, and that's where the Power of You stepped in.
The Power of You really is the reason that I'm in college right now. The Power of You definitely helped my decision. I really wasn't thinking about it that much, nor did I have a decision on where I was going to be or what I was going
to
do.
The Power of You did help me a lot with my decision to come to college. I hadn't really heard of it, and some friends told me about it, and my mom actually works for Northwest Airlines, got a huge pay cut. We weren't going to have enough money.
It's like winning the lottery, asking yourself whether you should cash in or not, because who goes to college for free?
I speak with, you know, the people in the office, you know, weekly, you know. I come in, stop in, say hi, they give me advice and ask me how I'm doing in class and stuff. That helps out, it shows that they really care.
I've been in counselor's office maybe twice a week seeing Brooke, so I mean, it's been really helpful. it gets really busy here, but they take time and sit down and talk to you, get to know you as a person. They understand what you need help with, and they give you the help that you need. And they're actually really prompt, too. So it's always really easy for me to see a counselor. And I know that there aren't that many people who work for the Power of You, so it's really surprising to me that myself and everyone that I know always can find a counselor. We can always find help. We can always get help for stuff.
You know, the transition for me was very easy, for the most part, because the staff here were wonderful. They were very, you know, encouraging. And so I think that's very important, especially for first year colleges, because we're all very confused, you know. We're just coming straight out of high school, and we're just looking for the right type of guidance to pull us through, you know.
I think it's really cool that people can come together and help those who need it financially, or even somebody who wasn't really interested in college. It really promotes and sets people up to actually want to go.
I think I would be a lot more stressed out if I was worrying about how I was going to pay my rent, and on top of that, college tuition.
It really kind of fell into my lap, and it was just the thing that really, you know, it really kept me going, because I really don't think I'd be in college without it.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Wilson Bradshaw. I am in my seventh year as president of Metropolitan State University, and I sincerely apologize for my tardiness. I'm a native Floridian, and weather like this really throws me for a loop, but that's really no excuse. Please accept my apologies, Madam Chair.
And welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. If you will permit me, I have a few comments to make, and please forgive, again, the redundancy. I know you've covered some of this, so I will proceed. I'm pleased to have this chance to give a brief overview of a unique demonstration project about increasing access to post-secondary education. That initiative, as you know by now, is called the Power of You. Phil Davis, the president of MCTC, was to be here with us today, but he's not. He's one of our partners, and of course you've met Donovan Schwichtenberg, the distinguished president of St. Paul College. Joining us, I believe, in the audience are some of our sponsors, and really pleased to introduce the directors from the three institutions of the Power of You program. I believe we have Kathleen Gordon from St. Paul College, Walter Novillo from MCTC, Christine Ramos, Metropolitan State University, and I believe we have several students from the program here with us as well. Now, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to say something that you won't hear often during this session. We're not here to ask for money. This initiative is a...
Welcome to the committee.
Great to be here. This initiative is a 5-year demonstration project. In order to launch this initiative, we have gone the route of seeking foundation and corporate sponsorship and support. Those funders, however, do not plan and are not able to support such a program beyond the demonstration project. They were attracted, however, by the chance to help inform a new kind of policy discussion, a discussion that resembles a visionary bill carried by Representative Carlson several years ago to expand higher education participation statewide. The Power of You is intended to address a serious threat to our democracy and to our economy, a threat that was highlighted in an urgent alert from the Itasca Project, Mind the Gap, pointing out educational disparities in Minnesota that threaten our workforce and indeed our social fabric. A threat also highlighted in a very frank letter to all of the nation's governors from former Governor James B. Hunt of North Carolina, former Governor Gary Carruthers of New Mexico, former Governor Frank Keating of Oklahoma, and former Governor of South Carolina and U.S. Secretary of Education Richard Riley. And I quote from that letter, a copy of the letter that I just received this morning. We can no longer afford to be compliant or complacent about the performance of higher education in America. We have enjoyed our reputation for having the world's best system of higher education, but a disturbing number of nations are educating more of their citizens to a higher level. Unless more Americans successfully enroll and graduate from higher education, our democracy and our economy will almost certainly become progressively weaker. In Minnesota, this threat takes the shape of very low college attendance rates among low-income families and communities of color. The communities where virtually all of the recent population growth has taken place in this state, and the communities that will provide most of our future growth. By 2010, two-thirds of all jobs will require education and skills beyond the 12th grade level. I think that, Tom, and you can remind me, that maybe you have seen some of the data on what the gaps are. But, for example, projections show that 3% of Minnesota's African American and American Indian ninth graders and 5% of Latino ninth graders will complete a bachelor's degree by the age of 25. If Minnesota competes in a global knowledge economy, and if the fastest growing segments of our economies, of our communities, have the lowest college participation rates, our society and our economy will suffer. The power view is intended to demonstrate a new approach to increasing college access where it's needed most. The premises on which we operate: many students do not succeed in college because they did not prepare in high school. Many students are not prepared in high school because they believe college is unaffordable. They hear the price tag of attending Ivy League schools, and they don't know about financial aid, or they believe they wouldn't be admitted to an institution of higher education. The goals of the Power Review seek to remove real and perceived financial barriers to college, to convince high school students and their parents that college can be affordable through Pell Grants, the State Grant Program, and the Power Review Grants. We must convince students and parents that taking a college curriculum makes sense. The basic components of the program: first, it's open to graduates of Minneapolis and St. Paul high schools, and they could be residents of either city. They must attend full-time 2 years at any of the three participating institutions, and we have arranged through the grant programs and through the private funds that we've raised for these students to attend tuition-free. Private grants to meet the tuition and fees are used after the need-based Pell Grant and state grant programs have provided their resources. We also provide counseling and advising and tutoring on campus. We have outreach to school districts and community organizations to reach middle school and high school students. And after 2 years, merit-based bridge scholarships are available to students attending St. Paul College and Minneapolis Community and Technical College. Students who have achieved scholarships will be available for those students to continue for an additional 2 years at Metropolitan State University. We would like to come back, Madam Chair, in 2009, halfway through the five-year project, to tell you in more detail what we have learned from serving three cohorts of students who would not have attended college without the Power Review. Based on the experience of this demonstration project, we hope state leaders will engage in a public policy discussion about the level of education that the state should provide to every Minnesotan without fees and without a means test. Here's what the Director of Economic Development, in fact, you have seen that clip. It really flowed really well before. But you've seen what the Director of Economic Development for the City of Minneapolis has said about the Power of You initiative. A growing chorus of analysts and leaders is supporting the proposal that Representative Carlson made several years ago, that Minnesota should make at least 1 year of post-secondary education universally available to its residents. Just as Minnesota decided to extend publicly supported education from grade 8 to grade 12 because we need citizens and workers with that level of preparation. This program complements the governor's achieved proposals. They're on the same continuum, in our opinion. Both seek to increase participation in post-secondary education. Ultimately, the goal is not to educate just the top 25% of Minnesotans or the bottom 10%. Here are some comments that we tell the students. You have seen comments. You've seen comments from students. We think very powerful comments, actually, from students in the first Power View cohort. Post-secondary education of some kind has to be open, and it has to be affordable for every high school graduate who wants to take advantage of it. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we'll be happy to respond to any questions or comments to the handout that we have provided. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bradshaw. Now, I understand that you're in your first year, right? And you went out and got...
Minneapolis Community and Technical College and St. Paul College admitted their first students to this program this past fall. Metropolitan State University will be admitting its first students in fall of 07.
And on this sheet that you provided, that's who donated the money for these scholarships?
Yes, the funders. There's a list along with the funders, and they provided the money not just for scholarships, but also for the other components of the program.
And the three institutions, Dr. Bradshaw, the three institutions use their regular staff for working with these students, or are there, have extra people been hired with some of this money?
Each of the institutions have appointed a director of the Power View program at Metropolitan State University. That's a new position. At St. Paul College, that's a new position. And I think that an existing position at MCTC, the responsibilities of which was expanded to be the director of the Power View.
And do you have a ballpark figure of how much money was raised for the initial group of people?
So we have some really keen staff here with us. I am going to say that we are at or around $3 million. Around $3 million. We had projected a five-year budget of about $5 million. Our funders have been not only responsive, but very generous. And I think that, I know it's because that they see the importance of this demonstration project and the importance of it not just for the dollars that they have provided, but also for catalyzing a public policy discussion on this issue.
And Mr. Switzenberg, the students that we saw, then the one that went to the counselor twice a week or what, they are getting regular assistance while they're at college when they meet a roadblock of some kind or another?
Madam Chair, they are getting regular assistance from the staff that we have on both colleges, Minneapolis and St. Paul. And they also are getting some extra assistance through some extra personnel we hire with some of the funds that we raise. The funds we raised were for tuition for all the students and also for some support staff, retention specialists, those type of people who work with the students.
And could you once more, Dr. Bradshaw, go over the group of students that you are especially targeting or reaching out for?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we intentionally targeted Minneapolis School District and St. Paul School District because those districts have very high proportion of students of color, first-generation students, and low-income students. Those are the students who have increasingly not participated in post-secondary education. That is why we thought the demonstration project should target those two large districts.
And do you reach out to a particular high school or several particular high schools?
We reach out to all of the high schools in those districts, and increasingly we are reaching out to the, I'm going to say junior high school, that's not right, middle schools, because we really do believe that the preparation for college should start earlier rather than later. And so our programs, as they evolve and mature, will seek to start our outreach activities at the lower grades.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How do you reach out to the students? What process do you use? Do you work with the counselors? Do you directly go into the school and meet with students? How do you select the students?
Well, Representative Peterson, Madam Chair. I will speak to how we reach out to the students, and I will ask my colleagues to speak to how we admit students or select students for the program. We do go into the high schools. We work with established programs in both of the school districts to bring this PowerView program to the attention of students who would be eligible to participate. We also, in your package, you will see that we have community partners. We really believe while the schools play a very important part in bringing the college possibility to the attention of students, we think that sometimes this message may be better delivered and it may be better heard in other settings. And that's why we have community partners, and we're working with those community partners to get the word out. And both the high schools, junior high schools, and with our community partners, we're not really asking them to do anything different programmatically from what they're doing, but we're asking them to make the power of you a part of their message. I'll ask my colleague to speak to how we select students for participation.
Madam Chair, we also involve each one of the schools in opportunities and how they wanted us to meet with their students. In some occasions, we met with the entire student body. On some occasions, we met with community members and parents. On some occasions, we went into individual classrooms. The attempt was to get information to all the students, and everyone was eligible to apply. But our intent was looking for those students with low income who really had planned on not going to college, and we purposely selected the students late in the spring to make sure we serve those students who were not going to go on to college, and we believe that any students who came were not planning ongoing to college, as one of the students in the clip addressed. Our intent also is to, in fact, we're doing that right now, going out with our program directors, meeting with schools, and looking for another class to be admitted and to be identified this spring for admission for next fall.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me what the says in the fall of 2006, 354 students met program eligibility requirements? Can you tell me what are the program eligibility requirements as far as high school? Is there a certain GPA? Is there are there specific eligibility requirements?
Madam Chair, Representative, the eligibility requirements refer to the fact that they have to be a student in St. Paul or in Minneapolis. We are attempting to target, to start with, those schools which would have the largest number of low-income people. And that's why we started with Minneapolis and St. Paul. So anyone could be eligible, and we also made it clear to the students that you could apply for the program, and it was going to be based on economic need. In other words, we were going to take the students who needed the most, because we weren't really sure how many students we were going to get to apply, and we weren't sure of how much money we would have raised to start with. So everyone could apply. We also explained that first they would be having their dollars addressed to student aid that is already available through federal and state grants. So they were eligible to apply. But one of the interesting parts of this process was that we've told students many times before, and parents have told students, counselors have told students, that economic aid is available to go to school, and you can apply for it. But interestingly enough, I think many students believe that we heard you say you can apply, but we don't think you met need. When we said tuition free, we didn't talk about your application for financial aid. You apply, and you can go to college tuition free. We had a large number of students apply, many more than usually would apply. And then we sorted out afterwards related to the financial aid and how much would come from financial aid and how much would come from our very generous benefactors.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Presidents. Welcome. First of all, I just want to say I think your institutions and you are to be commended for this pretty, risky perhaps to some people, prophetic to others, and work that you're engaged in here in the core cities. Many of us this past month in education committees have been focusing on our hearings on the achievement gap issue, educational disparities issues, and it's pretty clear to all of us here, on both sides of the aisle, policymakers here, that we're suffering a loss of human potential that's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable for us as a state. It's unacceptable for us as just human beings. We're, lots of young people are just falling through the cracks in K-12 and not proceeding on to some form of educational experience beyond K-12. And unfortunately, very heavily focused on low-income kids, regardless of color, but also specifically students of color, many of whom are in both our districts, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, in very concentrated form. And so I think that part of what you're doing here is you're impacting clearly an access issue, but I think you're also impacting even on a deeper issue, sort of a psychological issue for our society here, this notion of expectations of all our young people, including the expectations they may or may not have of themselves. So I have a couple of very quick questions. One is, can you tell us, and maybe you haven't even measured it yet, I'm not sure how you would, but can you tell us how any of this effort has been impacting on the expectations that you're hearing from young people in these school districts? Is the buzz out there? Is the word getting around? Are you seeing a different type of approach or articulation from young people in regards to an opportunity to continue their education? And then a couple of other tougher questions, and you don't need to go into these in depth, but we do worry, the K-12 and the E-12 front, we worry about college readiness, quote-unquote, issues. What's your experience, what kind of experience have you had in terms of students coming into the program in regards to college readiness, the ability to be ready to take these courses, and what, if any of that, suggests to you some kind of work that you need to be about, perhaps, as you continue to relate with our K-12 schools? And then finally, tell us a little bit about long-term sustainability for this effort. What's it going to take to sustain this kind of effort over time?
President Bradshaw.
Representative Mariani and Madam Chair, I'll speak to the buzz. A lot of people, parents and students, are talking about the power view. This past Sunday before last, I'm sorry, presidents from MSCU institutions fanned out across the metropolitan area and visited churches and places of worship to talk about access to higher education. The church that I visited, there were 9th and 10th graders, all of whom had heard about the power view. And that was very, very, very reinforcing. So, yes, the buzz is out there. Counselors know about it. Again, we are working within the schools. If you look at our list of collaborators, partners, you'll see Achieve Minneapolis is one of them. We've had a great partner in Catherine Jordan in that operation. So there is a lot of buzz, and most, probably all of the high schools in both districts know about the power view. The other issue, if I may address, is not the sustainability one. I'll leave that to my colleague here. But your second issue, Representative Mariani, was preparation. And I will remind everyone that both MCTC and St. Paul College are open admissions institutions. They take students with high school diplomas where they are academically. and they add value by providing courses that are needed to get those students to a level that will that they will have a greater probability of successfully engaging a college or technical school curriculum. We are concerned about the level of readiness, but I'll remind you that many of these students that we're attracting to the Power of You program never thought that they would be going to college, and so did not adequately prepare for college. We believe that one desired outcome from this project is that if students really know that college is available, it will change their behavior in 9th and 10th grade, and they will begin to prepare for something that they know is waiting for them at the end. If they don't believe, as they we know in the past, they haven't believed that that opportunity was there, they didn't prepare for it. So that's why we need to increasingly go to lower grades and bring the message of the Power of You. It is not real opportunity for anyone if they're not prepared to take advantage of it. So we are dealing with students who need some degree of developmental education, but our two-year colleges do a wonderful job with that. They have done that historically because of their open admissions, and I think increasingly we will see students needing less of that if they take the right curriculum, if they know that college is a real opportunity waiting for them.
President Schwettenberg?
I think we, Madam Chair, I think we also have to recognize that when we say college, it's a wide range of opportunities. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, a typefitter, a computer operator. There are many opportunities that students can be successful in. I think a lot of students shy away from college because they're thinking they don't have the abilities to be a doctor or a lawyer, but that's not the only thing that's available in college. And I don't think we can afford to leave any of these students behind if you look at what our labor needs are. And leaving them behind is going to also just increase the amount of money that we're going to spend on welfare for the future, and that certainly is not good for the society or for the individuals. So I think a lot of students and a lot of even teachers last year believed that we could not pull this off, that we were saying tuition-free, that we were not going to be able to start a class. Well, we have started a class. One of your questions was, what do we need to sustain it? We have about $3 million that has already been collected, and we need about $6 million to finance this project for the full 5 years. Remember we said that we were going to finance the students for 2 years. We also have some room at the top of that for remediation that is going to be required for a lot of the students so that they can get the remediation necessary before they go into some of the programs. And then those students who are successful at the end are going to have an opportunity to go on for an additional 2 years at Metro State. Students could end up getting a four-year degree, students who never dreamed before that they were never going to have this opportunity.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question that's on the readiness issue as well. So part of it's been answered, but I see in your charts and materials you present us about 30% of students in this first semester did not receive passing grades in the program, so that the readiness issues are showing themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously going to be a challenge for retention to carry them through the entire 2 years. So in addition to the additional staffing support you talked about, and you talked about some remediation as well, could you elaborate a little more on what additional support there is to academically to make sure, to help ensure the success of the students in the program?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have added more sections for remedial workforce students in math and in English. And those are the two major problems that students have. We also have some students where English is a second language, is a class that's needed. We've added sections there. So we've added sections in the areas where we need to have remediation for the students, and we would anticipate that for the next group coming in, that we will also have to have more remediation opportunities. But we're trying to get their skills up to a level where they can enter into the programs and be successful rather than just dumping them in the programs to start with. And we know also that we're going to have to be working with the individuals to help them make some decisions about what programs that they're going to go into to be successful. I do not believe that everybody can be what they want to be. I know that's sort of against the American dream, but it is not true that everybody can be what they want to be. They need to look at what their abilities are, they need to look at their opportunities for remediation, and they need to have knowledge about what these opportunities are so they can make a right decision and find a pathway that they're going to be successful at.
Dr. Bradshaw.
Madam Chair, I'll just mention a couple of other components that are designed to enhance the success of students. There is what is called at MCTC a bridge program. That is a program that starts before the regular semester, and students in the Power Review take advantage of what we've come to call in the business co-curricular activities. These are activities that are designed to help students prepare to be successful in college. At Metropolitan State, when we admit our first cohort of students, those students will have a six-week summer program, programs that are designed to teach them how to study and what is expected in college compared to what had been expected in high school. The students are very surprised to hear that when they go full-time in college, they are in the classroom for 12 to 15 hours a week. They're coming from an environment where they were in the classroom for 30-35 hours a week, and it is quite a transition. Our programs are designed to provide support and pathways for students to be successful in that transition. So it's not just about the adding developmental courses, although that is a key component of it. It's also about getting students prepared for college in the broadest sense, and I think my colleague, President Trichtenberg, made it very clear. I think what's really good about the three participating institutions is that students can come in and engage at public institutions, a wide spectrum of technical, college, and university programs. And they can do all of that in one initiative here in the core cities.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at the materials that you brought, something kind of stuck out, and I have a question about it, and that's looking at the public schools at a glance. And I noticed in Minneapolis, students of color make up 71.8%, and in St. Paul at 73.5%. Yet the graduation rate in Minneapolis is 42%, and in St. Paul it's 73%. And I'm wondering if you have any information as to what accounts for that difference. And if you do have any information, perhaps if maybe it's new immigrants versus native population, have you found that you've needed to employ different strategies for the different cities to reach out to these groups? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't think I could speak to the differences between Minneapolis and St. Paul, why the graduation rates are different. I think that would be a question that the public schools would have to offer. I just know there's a difference in the percentage of graduates, but there's not a large difference in the percentage of students who need extra assistance to go on to college. And the students who were coming on to both the colleges needed a lot of remedial assistance.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. And one thing we haven't mentioned, I don't believe, is that we have engaged the Wilder Foundation to do the evaluation of this program. So many of the questions that either you're articulating now or that you're thinking about, we will be looking to Wilder to help us do an objective analysis and evaluation of this program. I will remind us all, this is the second semester of the Power Review, but the evaluation component is a very important component of the program because we are prepared to make adjustments over this 5 years to enhance the success of the program. And we think the information that we get back from the Wilder Foundation's evaluation will help us with that.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to comment. I've been interested in this issue for a number of years. And what got me interested in it, and I want to reinforce some of the testimony we just had, I've been retired for 8 years, but the school that I taught in was 66% free and reduced lunch, two-thirds minority. And the counselors would come in. I taught mainly 12th grade social studies, and they would come in and do a presentation on career planning and so on to the seniors. And they would cover things like financial aid and what have you, and they would do a superb job. They would leave. I would talk to the students, and Mr. Carlson, we can't afford to attend. You know, that was the feeling of the students. I sometimes talk to parents, and you get the same answer. You know, gee, I'd love my son or daughter to be able to attend a college, but we can't afford it. And so the whole concept here of making available free tuition, I think, is helping really bridge a major gap in terms of the attitude and the feeling of these students and their families in terms of what they can achieve. And I was very pleased when this was first announced that I'm going to attend an event down at Minneapolis Community Technical College when they unveiled the program called the Power of You, because it really was addressing what I saw firsthand as a classroom teacher, a major, major issue in terms of students wanting to be able to learn. So comment that he's not respond other than I'm just pleased as can be to see this moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for bringing the program to our attention and making us more aware of the opportunities that students in Minneapolis and St. Paul are having, and that I'm pleased that you're continuing to reach out and encourage more students to take advantage of the opportunities that are going to be placed before them. Thank you for coming to the committee.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Gradwell, did you want to make a short response at this time?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, Jim Gradwell. Naturally, Minneapolis Public Schools strongly supports MCTC. We think this is a great program. We think the private community has really stepped up, and the higher ed community has really stepped up. I did want to come in and just speak to Representative Rude's comments about graduation rates, and I think I'd like to work with folks at Power of You about that figure. I think that's probably inaccurate. Normally, when you see a delta that big, and to be very brief, under NCLB graduation rates, it's calculated one way, and then if you do a four-year completion study, it's calculated another way. The four-year completion study on an urban high school, Minneapolis or St. Paul, is generally, that's where you hear the governor or other folks talking about a 50% graduation rate. You look at ninth graders and track them 4 years later, a four-year completion rate, and ask yourself where they are. It's a valid methodology. The problem with it is students who do not complete in 4 years, or who move to Marquette, Wisconsin, or disappear off the end of the earth and are considered dropouts. The NCLB graduation rates for Minneapolis and St. Paul high schools by the regular high schools vary from like 64 to 85 or 90% on an individual high school basis. And I'm only sorry Representative Rude wasn't in the room to hear that. But I'm sure you'll all tell us. Thanks very much.
We will tell her, Mr. Gradwell, and if you work with...
Happy to do so.
...with them, and if there's any changes to be made, we will bring attention to the whole committee again.
Thanks very much.
Yep. Thank you very much. Representative Peterson, item 2 on the success agenda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have the honor and privilege of introducing the International Baccalaureate Middle Years Program from the Robbinsdale School District, from Sandberg Middle School. And I'm very proud of that because that is my home district. And I was very pleased to pick up the paper a week ago. I think it was just a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, and see that Harvard came calling to four cities around the globe. And one of them was Portugal, or the countries, I guess, Uganda, Hong Kong, and Golden Valley, Minnesota. And they came because of the program, particularly in middle school, that dealt with international baccalaureate. And if they're here, they can come up to the front. Sorry, I should have said you should do that. Okay. And
I think this is particularly relevant because as we're talking about college and the powers you just now, we know that if we're going to be dealing with students and career planning and going to college, it really does need to start in the middle years because that's when students are thinking about it, that's when they're planning their courses, their course of and their curriculum, and it really is essential that they have that kind of background as they approach the high school years. And this program, is, at least as I read through the program, and I think you all have it in your packet, certainly deals with the four R's that we've been hearing about a great deal, and that is the issue of rigor, relevance, relationships, and finally, results. But we know that the relevance, the relationships, and are really important along with the rigor, and this program at least seemed to attack all of those issues. And so I'm very pleased to welcome Lauren Hildebrand, who is the director of that program, as I understand it.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair and representatives, thank you so much for having us here. We're delighted to be here, particularly on the heels of the Harvard visit, which was both rewarding and eye-opening, and we have even more work to do, we find out, as we forge ahead. I've been fortunate to bring with me a couple of the teachers who were part of the Harvard visit. They're sixth grade teachers, and they'll be speaking to you shortly, and most pleased to bring with me three students, all at the seventh grade level. That's generally about 13 years old, but they'll correct me, I'm sure, as they come forward. I'd like to share first a brief PowerPoint that we put together for you to clarify what the middle years program is, and I'm excited to be following the program that just presented because it is a beautiful dovetail. They reiterated many of the things that you will see here, and we feel strongly about starting earlier to attract all sorts of students to more rigorous courses so that they are better prepared for the future and for years at college, perhaps. I will start with just this brief introduction and then turn it over to the students and the teachers who will do the real talking. We are, at this time, working with authorized IBMYP, International Baccalaureate Middle Years Programs, and there are currently in the world 517 authorized programs in 67 countries. There are 290 in North America, which is in Canada, U.S., and Caribbean, 170 in the U.S., and one in Minnesota. However, there are a number of programs that are right on the cusp of becoming authorized. There are others that are applying to the program, and there are 15 that I know of personally, and I'm not the grand poobah of knowing everything about programs coming up in the United States and in Minnesota, but there are a number of programs that are happening right now. What is IBMYP? It's a five-year program. Academic, it's for ages 11 through 16. It was started in Geneva, Switzerland about 1993 for the middle years program. However, it's been in longer existence with the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program. It's a broad-based liberal arts curriculum that is designed to be a rigorous attempt at all curriculum to broaden students' perspectives, and it is balanced and developmentally adjusted and designed around the ages of those students that partake in it. There's a focus on learning styles, so it's methodology, not just curriculum. We teach multiple perspectives, and frankly, the students teach us multiple perspectives. We are interested in having children who are capable of functioning in a greater world economy and just be good citizens for a world situation that will bring us hopefully eventually some kind of peace in this world. It's real life connections. The curriculum is surrounded by something that we'll show you just briefly called areas of interaction that tie all the curriculum to real life application. So you won't hear students say in a program, at least I haven't, that what's this for? Why am I ever going to have to use this? I don't want to study this. These are motivated kids. We do embed the state standards throughout the curriculum. We use district curriculum, and so do all MYPs across the United States use their district's curriculum. It's just a methodology that makes a difference. It is developed and evaluated by educators in the field. So I am one who goes to other schools and other programs around the United States and looks at programs to see how they're doing, and I do some writing as well. So it's not written by somewhere else out there. It's written by best practice practitioners, and we have them write in our own school, as is evidenced by the Harvard visit, I think. This is the curriculum model. The child is at the center, and around the child are these things called areas of interaction. They are themes that, again, tie the subjects together so kids get the understanding of the disciplines as being related to real life. There are 8 subjects that we study in all MYPs, and they happen every single year. Language A is the language of instruction in the school, and in our school at Sandberg Middle School in Golden Valley, that is English. Humanities is a combination of history and geography. Technology is such things as facts, family and consumer science, and computer, business computer, and that sort of thing, industrial technology or design technology. Mathematics is a variety of mathematical practices, but in every year we cover the 5 areas of mathematics, starting at 6th grade. The arts are your performing and visual arts. Science is the variety of sciences we offer in a typical school district, and physical education. Language B is a second language that is acquired through the process of this program. At our school, we offer Spanish and French, although it's a choice in the district as to what it can accommodate or would like to promote, and so the other schools that are coming up around us are looking at a huge number of options in that second language. What makes it different? The fact that it is a 5-year program, 6th grade through 10th grade, and our partner school is Cooper High School. It not only has the Middle Years Program Partnership, but it also has the Diploma Program. We have wonderful support from IBO, that's the International Parent Organization, and the training for teachers is excellent. We'll let our teachers perhaps address that. There are stringent standards so that there can be quality control, not oversight, simply standards for control of the quality that is given out so that students and teachers can expect the best and achieve the best. Again, the areas of interaction and the community service requirement. The areas of interaction, just briefly, are something that I think drive this program. Approaches to learning is something that is at the center closest to the child that teaches explicitly, not implied, study skills, organization skills, time management skills. Parents often bring to us children that they are the first to say, well, he comes with a bit of organizational challenge. And we don't know too many 6th graders who come fully prepared for the middle school experience or any other experience. They're still trying to dig themselves out of their bedrooms sometimes. I was one of those. But we do teach all of these things. We teach how to research, how to study. Another area of interaction is the environment, and for this age we focus pretty much on recycling and conservation of resources. Health and social education teaches students how to make good decisions about themselves and their place in the community. Community service and community awareness talks to the child about where that place is, where they fit themselves into the community and to the greater world, and what their responsibility is to that. Consequently, we do have a community service requirement in this program, although it is set independently by each school. Our service requirement at 6th grade is a minimum of 10 hours. At 7th, it's 15. At 8th, it's 20, and up to 30 at 10th grade. However, those are minimum requirements, and many of our students go well beyond that, and it's about reflection as well. Homo faber is the 5th area of interaction, and that has to do with the creative genius of humankind and the impact of ideas on society. The interdisciplinary cross-subject planning and teaching is what you're going to hear from the teachers. That's what brought Harvard to our school. We were asked to submit, all schools were asked around the world to submit what they felt was an exemplary interdisciplinary unit that crossed subject areas, and we submitted one, and that was the one that was chosen. The kids understand they're learning better because they're seeing that they won't just walk out of math, slam the door, as I really honestly did, and say, that's it for math today. And that needed to be it for math today. But in our program, the kids are learning math in humanities, they're learning math in Phi-Ed, they're learning math across the curriculum, and they're learning Phi-Ed in humanities and sciences and whatever. We cross everything over as much as we can, although not all the time. There are discrete times for the subject areas to be learned. There's criterion reference assessment. I'll skip this one and come back to it. That's where the child is scored against standards and not against other kids, so that all of the check pluses and the smiley faces and the good job and the stickers and things like that, while they may be there, they may also, there's also a rubric that the child gets in front of the assignment to see where to buy in to the assignment and to their achievement. And then that rubric is attached at the end as well, and it is scored, often by the student, him or herself, and the teacher. The foreign language begins at sixth grade. As I said, we have Spanish and French. There is a global focus and perspective so that the kids can see that they're not alone in this world. And there is real-life application of learning. The pace tends to be faster. The depth tends to be deeper. It is a whole child approach. It's not just academic. We're dealing with the cognitive and the affective so that kids can understand their entire sense of belonging and achievement and scholarship and the extracurricular side of themselves, their after-school activities and the fun things they do, their friendships, relationships. The teachers work on this explicitly in this program. The personal project at grade 10 is just a fabulous, independent, year-long piece of work that follows the student's passion, and it can be anything. It has a huge research component and a reflective piece that goes with it, and it is scored again on an assessment criterion-based evaluation. But these things are marvelous. I've seen kids build a fishing rod from scratch, real scratch, with a grandparent. I've seen kids write a novel, build a fairy tale costume because they were always interested in being a princess, and they wear it to the prom, and nobody can dance with them because it's too big. But it's been a marvelous thing to watch these projects in grade 10, which is the culminating activity for this program. There is a certificate of achievement on the completion of the program, including the community service and the personal project. There are minimal discipline issues in these classes because these kids are motivated. They are surrounded by kids that want to learn. They may come into the program with a little less of that drive. Maybe it was mom or dad that maybe wanted them to be in the program. But mostly they come to this program with the idea that they can take the reins off, take the blinders off, and dive full steam ahead, as do the teachers. There is huge student-parent satisfaction with this program because the kids are learning, the parents are very involved, the kids are seeing life from a variety of perspectives. I'd also like to say before I move to this, I did have a clue that you might be talking about some things about diversity and balance in programs, so I did put this together here. But I'd also like to say that we have a broad range of students in our school in Golden Valley. So we felt that we needed to offer a broader range of opportunities and options because we are not a homogeneous district. So we wanted to offer as much as we could to all types of kids. And we have probably, in my mind, the most progressive school district for achieving the needs of students at all levels. We have wonderful, wonderful middle school programs across the district that offer a variety of and a range of opportunities, and ours happens to be one of several. We adopted the MYP to make sure that we were attracting and maintaining capable kids, motivated kids. And we do have an application process to our program, although it is not required across the world. It's an option. Many schools have an application process, many don't. We are a program within a school, whereas many schools are full school programs. It's left up to the district to see what it can support or would support. and what its view on education is or needs to be. We are always open to different options. Right now, this is what has worked for us since 1999, when we became one of only 27 schools across the United States at that time that offered this program. We have students can apply in 6th, 7th, or 8th grade, and my principal did bring our applications and our handbook in case you're interested. You do have in the red folder there lots of other items to peruse, but I didn't know at the time if you'd be interested in the application. He said, oh, yes, you would. So he did bring those. They can apply at 6th, 7th, or 8th. If they don't go in 6th grade, they can certainly try again 7th or 8th grade, and they're almost... We accept a huge range of students into this program. So as far as attracting diversity, we knew right in the beginning that we were having difficulty with this. I have been a gifted and talented teacher and coordinator for many years prior to coming to this program. I had the same issues in the gifted and talented program. What we have, some of the things that we've done to speak to this issue are some of the things right here. We have a district-wide brochure that goes out from the central office. It talks about the choice programs and the other special programs in all of our schools. This is made available to all fifth grade families in the district, private or not, if they're in parochial schools or homeschooling. They get the same information as all of the students in the district. We do school visits. We've had schools come to visit us. We give school tours. We have parent and family nights where whole families come to hear about the program, and then our students will speak, our teachers will speak, then our students go off into a room and talk to the kids about what it's like to be in the program and ask questions from the children who are there to learn. We have an MYP diversity committee that meets regularly and answers some pretty tough questions, which has helped me with ways to attract diversity to the program. We have family meetings with in our minority population. I've invited families to come to the table and help me with this issue. How do we get more kids coming into this program? We do focus groups with minority students. I meet with them and talk to them about what it is they're looking for. How can we bring more of their classmates into the program? What is stalling them? What is keeping them from looking at a rigorous curriculum and accepting the challenge that is built around 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds, not something that's too far out there for them to grasp? We do student-to-student invitations where we ask kids to directly connect with other students. We review and ensure the selection criteria to make it accessible for families. We do a parent network with phone calls. There are staff awareness practices where we sensitize all staff about how to be looking for these children. We work with the ESL, ELL programs in the schools. We do summer phone calls. I made 60 phone calls over the summer to families that may not have taken this program seriously, and although we didn't attract all families, we did bring in 15 of these families, whereas they had not heard, much like this other program, they may not have heard about it. We work with
the children, excuse me for interrupting, but we are a little time challenged.
Okay. All right. I'm not quite sure what that should be, but I'm almost at the end of it. All right, this is the second to the last slide. So we have a number of ways that you can see here. This is what's been happening as a result of that. Over the process of time, we've increased our diversity, I think, significantly, and that trend seems to be continuing. Free and reduced, we have less access to those statistics, although you can see that over the process of time, we've also been working on that and in getting those numbers growing. These are the types of kids we're looking for, and these are the types of kids we are helping to create, and these are the types of kids who identify as MYP students themselves. And here is the end of our program, at which point I'd like to take the opportunity to invite two of our teachers to come forward. These are sixth grade teachers who were involved in the Harvard Project, as well as just involved in teaching in a great program.
Ms. Nelson, Ms. Gilbertson, welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'll start by saying I'm very nervous. This is not my... I got to picture you at 6th grade.
Tell us your name first.
My name is Katie Nelson, And I teach sixth grade in the at Sandberg Middle School in the MYC program. And I'd like to speak to you on two things, and very shortly, I know you are time challenged. We are. I didn't mean at the end for that to be.
I wanted to make sure everything got in that was supposed to get in. And those cute kids are with you.
Yes, and they've been waiting very patiently.
Yes, they have.
The two things I'd like to speak on are the areas of interaction and how it drives our program. We have five areas of interaction that actually drive the program: homophobic, environment, health and social education, community, and approaches to learning. The largest one that we focus on is sixth graders, our approaches to learning. It is, rather than going into what each one of them are, it is intertwined into our curriculum, both our state and district curriculum. So as Ms. Hildebrand had stated earlier, our curriculum does not change, it just broadens the scope. One of the ways that we do that is through interdisciplinary teaching, which is why we actually had the opportunity for Harvard to come visit and see how we actually do our interdisciplinary teaching. We have many, many units that we have created within our curriculum that we've done that. But as a teacher teaching in this program, which is the second thing I'd like to address, I believe it has strengthened me as a teacher. The program for teachers is volunteer. So if we wanted to be in the program, we would volunteer for it. Included within this program, as Mrs. Hildebrand had stated earlier, is that there's a lot of training involved. I've gone to two trainings, one on the areas of interaction, which is how to embed it into our curriculum, and the second on how to assess. Both of them were fabulous. They work with best practices. They have taught me to become a better teacher and to focus on the kids. Although we spend a lot of time, and it is very time-consuming, the rewards are great. I can't say enough about the kinds of kids and that come back to us after they've been through this program and the things that they've said to us. Truly, truly make this a rewarding program. And I guess really that's all I would like to say about the program at this point. Ms. Gilbertson, I think, is going to be speaking about our actual interdisciplinary programs. I'll let her speak to that.
Ms. Gilbertson, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Nicole Gilbertson, and I teach at sixth grade at Sandberg. And one of the strongest parts I feel this program has is its interdisciplinary approach to learning. It's a style that's not unique to our program, but it's something that's really looked highly upon in the IBMYP program. Really, it's just an effort to make connections between not only the content that students are learning, but also the skills, and that those connect not just, they connect outside of the classroom, as well as with what the students are learning in their other subject areas. This looks different at all points during the year. Sometimes in the year, we find connections between math and science. It may be the actual content that we're studying, or it may be the skills that the students are using. Sometimes it involves two to three subjects. A writing skill may be used in their social studies class as they're reflecting on what they're reading about nonfiction-wise in social studies and reading at the same time. The article that you referenced earlier, the Harvard visit, that is probably one of our favorite units. It's a unit we've been rewriting the past few years, and that is a unit that focuses on ancient civilizations. Before we begin the unit, we take a look at why we need to study ancient civilizations. Two reasons, one being they're part of our state standards, and we need to address those. And then two, we also feel that our students can learn valuable lessons by looking at the past. And that's really how we frame the unit. We have a guiding question in most of our IB units, and that question addresses how does the past shape the future, and what can we learn from the past. In our interdisciplinary unit, we look at the history of many civilizations across time, from prehistory to medieval times. We look at things such as social issues, environmental issues, inventions, Lots of our students are amazed right now to find out that some of the things that make our lives just so convenient today are based on ideas that came from 5,000 years ago. The wheel is not a new invention. We have been just improving upon it. We look at, in math class, we look at ancient number systems, and along with being fun because they seem like they're codes and puzzles to break, we realize that some of the bases of our math system today came again from areas across the globe. Not only do we teach in this fashion, we also try to assess the students in this fashion. We feel that if we teach a skill in one class, that skill should be transferred to other classes as well. At the end of our long unit, 14 weeks, the students are expected, after researching, demonstrating the research skills that we've worked so hard on, to write a comparison and contrasting essay. That's in their social studies classes. But yet all these skills are taught in their language arts classes. So they're expected to show those ideas again in other situations. At the same time, we try to go back to our approaches of learning, where we've taught kids to find out how you show your learning best. And we give them some freedom in their assessment time to show their learning in the best way that they can. It doesn't necessarily need to be on a test or a paper. It may be in a song. It may be in a presentation that they put on. So we offer that freedom, and that's one of the freedoms I don't think can necessarily be given in all classrooms. It is due much to the fact that we are given the time to plan together and to create these activities for the students. Again, I know we're at a time frame and I could talk to this point all day, but like my colleague Ms. Nelson said, I think this program provides not only powerful learning, but it also gives us a powerful way to teach. The interdisciplinary approach is one of its, in my opinion, strengths, and it's hard for us not to make these connections between the subjects. I have a hard time not addressing what they're learning in other classes, and I think it helps the kids see that learning does go beyond those classroom walls.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson.
So, Madam Chair, what we'd like to do right now is introduce our students who have been through these interdisciplinary units and who have learned and worked with us. And so I'd like to introduce them now and have them come and speak to you.
Please.
We first, and if you all please come forward, we have Ryan Murphy, Linda Carandi, and Tom Bainey.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm first.
Fine. Linda?
Yes, and I'm Linda Carandi.
Good.
I go to Carl Sandburg Middle School. I joined IB because I wanted to be challenged. I didn't want the work to be easy for me because then I wouldn't feel as good when I completed something that was a hard task for me. In math, we're doing equations. And once I've solved something very complicated, I feel so much better about finishing that problem than when I do if I'm doing something easy. I really enjoyed this program, and my parents played a big part of me joining it. They grew up in a rural area, and that place valued as the only way you can make something better of yourself. So they taught me to value my education too and the privileges that I have. In IB, we learn about ethnocentrism in 7th grade in our social studies class. Our teacher teaches us that he does not say don't discriminate, he does not say don't stereotype. He teaches us what it means to be stereotyped against, what it means to have somebody not accept you because of your skin color, somebody not accept you because of your race, somebody not accept you because of your gender. That unit touched me deeply because I'm not American, and I understood how it felt to be treated differently because of who you are. And our teacher taught us to love who we are because we're different and we're special like that. He also taught us we're not taught to hate by ourselves, we're taught by our parents. And that also opened my eyes and said, it's not us, our fault. We can also change what's happening. What we teach our kids, what we teach the students around us, what we teach our friends is what's going to change the world today. Thank you.
You've learned well. Ryan?
I am Ryan Murphy. I also go to Sandberg Middle School. And I joined IB also for a challenge, because if I don't get like a challenge, I feel that I'm not really learning anything. It's just, okay, I'm done with it. Like, what have I learned? I've already known this. And IB really gives me a challenge. Like, I don't know about all that I'm learning, and now that I've gone through 1 year, I've learned a lot more. I also joined because now I can take a second language. I am taking French, and I enjoy learning a second language. And, like, I don't want to just be limited to going to places that only speak English, like America, and go to other countries, France, Canada, places like that. And it really interests me in all the different things that I can learn in IB.
Thank you. Merci. Tom?
Hi, my name is Thomas Bainey, and I also go to Sandberg Middle School. I'm a seventh grader, and I'm going to focus on how IB is different from other programs. One of my favorite parts about IB is the community service projects that we need to accomplish over the course of the year, and I think that it teaches you an important lesson to help out your community, and I feel that I'm a better person after going through this program and just using, doing community service just makes me feel better about myself. And I think that's a real prominent part of this program that no other program I feel has. Another part of this program that I really like is how the students all are willing to learn. And because you need to audition for this, for getting into IB, I feel that the students are willing to learn, and the teachers don't have any problems with teaching students. The students can learn faster, learn better, and accomplish more tasks within the class. I think that IB is just overall a good program for the students to go into. And like my friend Ryan has said, the language part of it is really great. Thank you.
Okay. So Tom, you're seventh grade. Ryan, you're?
Seventh grade.
And Linda? Okay. So you're all seventh graders. Okay. And how many kids are in your class, in your group, in your IB program?
I believe around 110.
In the seventh grade?
In seventh grade, yes. Yeah.
No? Ms. Hildebrand?
There are, at Sandberg Middle School, about 350 students in three grades, or about 125 at the seventh grade.
Any other questions for the students? Representative Grappolo.
Paul, I'm impressed with the articulate nature of all three students, and I'm wondering if any of you three would be interested in running against Representative Peterson. That's what I
Only if we pass Representative Kahn's bill.
No, I wanted to make a comment. I was very impressed with the articulate nature of all three students. I mean, you guys did a really good job. What was it?
What do you do? The school's in Representative Carlson's district.
Oh, you did it better.
Oh. You are very wise not to answer the question.
No, really good job, guys. Really good.
Thank you so much. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, students and educators as well. Uh-huh. I taught a class called Service Learning, and it was all about service projects. Can you give us the examples of the service projects that you have done or you have seen done for students in the community and the communities?
I'm working one a little bit outside of our community. I'm working on a project to help Liberia from the war. A lot of children's parents died, and there's an orphanage there that one of the members of our African group has a connection with. So we're going to raise, we've raised money, and we're donating school supplies so they can have a better ability to learn. And that has really helped me as a person.
Ryan?
I have seen, like, other people, just, it's nice to feel that you help out around your community, just, like, because you want your community to really be a better place, and I've just seen people do things with their community, like, help out at a library or a school, and so they're okay with that.
Tom?
I suppose there's a lot of different organizations that I help volunteer at. One of which is called Lego League, which is a nationwide group. I think multiple nations participate in it. But at there's a in fall there is a competition at Sandberg Middle School, and I help set up there.
What do you do?
Well, there's basic, just really brief summary. These students make robots to accomplish tasks on tables. And I help set up the tables and help with awards and just basically maintain what's going on during the competition.
Great. Representative Flower.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the students for your testimony, and also was particularly interested that you wanted to be challenged. I think that's very interesting to us, and this would someday maybe you'll be in our seats and you can help us work through the state's problems. I just wondered what each of you see as your future career, and how is your school helping you get there?
Tom?
I believe that right now, at the moment, I'm undecided, but going through this program, I think, will, in the end, help me go to a better college, and there will be more options open for me. So even though I don't exactly, I'm not sure what I'd like to do now, I feel that I, once I get to the point where I decide what I'd like to be, I will have the option to be what I'd like.
Ryan?
Again, I'm not also exactly sure what I want to be, but feeling as though we're doing so many different things in the IB program that, like, in high school and things like that, I'll know what I want to be when I'm older, and this will help me because they're not just giving me, like, one path, it's multiple choices.
Sure, you've got 3 years ahead. Linda?
I'm leaning towards being a doctor for children, and I like working with children, and I've tutored before as community service, so that's helped me also work with children, learn how to interact with them better, and as a doctor, I think that would help me.
Great. You know, there's a medical school in Duluth, though. Let me know when you're ready to talk. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Representative Peterson, for the teachers. Thank you, students. Ms. Nelson, Ms. Gilbertson. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, you didn't talk too much about, and this may be for Ms. Hildebrand also, about the training that it takes to be involved with this program, and I think there's some additional cost to the district to initiate these programs, both in the middle school and the high school. Can you address that briefly?
I can address the training. I'll leave the cost to Mrs. Hildebrand. As far as being able to teach in the program, most teachers are initially attend some sort of training, which focuses on the main components of the program, the areas of interaction that you heard about, and also the idea of framing the guiding questions, such as how does the past shape the future. And then we also receive some instruction or training on how to go about assessing students and the interdisciplinary approach.
Costs for the program actually vary. Most districts will tell you that the largest cost to them for the middle years program is the training. However, we're very fortunate in this state in that our State Department of Education, through the legislature, helps us with reimbursing training costs for travel. We've also been fortunate in that we have attracted so much interest in this program that the IB program is currently looking at the state as a center for training. We already give one form of the workshop and continue to attract interest across the whole region, and we'll soon hopefully be attracting a greater training process here. But I know that I've seen district budgets across many, many states, and there isn't one that you can say is normal or standard. Our budget is different, hugely different from other districts. Again, the training costs are the most expensive part of that. We figure it's about between $1,200 and $1,500 per teacher to go take plane, register for the training, and the accommodations while there, although they do feed you very well.
Ms. Nelson. I would like to add that the training is very, very effective, very, very motivating, and it is really based on best practices. And we come back with those of us that go to training expected to share with the other members that may not go. So that, in a way, helps keep our costs down somewhat. And whenever somebody goes to training, we come back very, very motivated, ready to share with the rest of our IB teachers. So it's very, very effective.
Other costs are like postage and simple things that any program would come up against. Any part of the district, you have printing and postage and such. We don't buy books because we use the district's books. We use the district's curriculum. We don't send our exams anywhere. We do our own writing and evaluating exams.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming. The parents and the audience can be very proud of your students from Sandberg Middle School. They appeared and did very well, and I think they should get a star or something.
They're getting lectures.
Representative Ruth? The minutes are in the packet. I assume that they're well read. And there are no additions or corrections. Representative Ruth moves that the minutes be adopted as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. This meeting is adjourned.